It's Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan, your home of America's team. Will Chambers in here today with Bobby Belt and Peyton Russell. Now time to talk to the head coach of your Dallas Cowboys, Broughton Schoenheimer. It's brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. And Shoddy, Will Chambers here. It's great to meet you. I'm in for Sean. I know that shocks you to no end.
Yeah, hey, listen, there's no better way to start the new year than to do this show with guys I actually like, Will. And you and Bobby are clearly my two favorites on the show, and can't wait to talk a little bit of ball with you guys.
We're just going through the cliffs. I mean, what a great year it's been. And I, as a part of the station, but certainly as a big part of the audience, have enjoyed listening to you guys throughout the season. And really, just in general, I want to ask you, you know, and looking over your career and how long you were an offensive coordinator through the years, then some time off, you're back, some time off. And when you were hired, I don't think it's any surprise that it to you to hear that it was a surprise for a lot of people when the Dallas Cowboys have a head coaching position that's open. All the names that you hear from the Adam Schefters of the world, of these big name coaches, and all of a sudden, wow, it's Brian Schottenheimer. What do you think about, you know, your career leading up to it, and how different are you of a coach now as to where you were back when your name was, you know, preeminent among those coaching searches?
Yeah, I think it's like life, Will. You know, I mean, honestly, like when I first broke into coaching, you know, I wanted to go and just learn from different people. So what I kind of did was I bounced around, man. I mean, my first job ever was with Dick Vermeil in St. Louis. I was kind of like a offensive assistant. I used to have to sit on the floor in meetings and listen to Dick Vermeil and Jim Hannifin, and Bud Carson was our defensive coordinator. And I learned so much about football. Then I spent a year in Kansas City with my dad, and then I went to Syracuse to learn, to get a chance to actually coach a position. I coached receivers and was the passing game coordinator there. And then I made a decision I wanted to learn more about the run game. So I go to USC out with Paul Hackett, and I learn tight ends, and I coach the tight ends because I wanted to learn the run game. And I just think, you know, then I got an opportunity to coach quarterbacks, and that was something that I loved and I was passionate about. I played quarterback, and when I got my first coordinator job, you know, things were very, very good, and we were rolling, and we were having a lot of success. And first year, big turnaround. We go to the playoffs with the Jets, and we were one of the best offenses in the league. And you start getting interviews and stuff. And then, you know, things like in life, man, things turn. And then you're like, okay, well, you know, you decide after 6 years in New York, hey, I'm going to do something different. It was time for a change. You go to St. Louis. You know, you're coaching Sam Bradford, and Sam's getting hurt every year, and you're like, man, well, this isn't what I signed up for. And then you just keep going, man. And I think, you know, when I came to Dallas as a consultant, you know, I really did it because I wanted to be in a building, because I love coaching. I love being around people. There were some great people that I'm very, very close to: Dan Quinn, Mike McCarthy, people like that. Certainly guys I've gotten to know. And I've always been the same guy every day, man. And that's kind of what motivates me. And whether you're the hottest name as a 32-year-old as a coordinator of the the New York Jets, and you're turning down jobs and things like that, or whether you're coaching quarterbacks in Jacksonville and, you know, you're working for Urban Meyer and it's not going great, then the next year, like, what are you going to do? You make decisions. But at the end of the day, man, I think good coaches are good coaches, but it's more than that. You know, when you sit in a position as a head coach, it's not just about X's and O's. Hell, I wish I did more X's and O's. This is funny. I wish I could talk more ball. But at the end of the day, man, there's so many things where it comes down to leadership and holding people accountable and work ethic and connection and culture and things like that. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes in life and in the world, people get caught up in names and things like that, and not, hey, who's really qualified for the job and why?
Yeah, where do you think that it's when the narratives around coaching and coaching searches is mostly wrong, or maybe just misanalyzed when it comes to assessing coaches for jobs, or, you know, how well or how poorly they do one?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the media is so powerful, and that's our life, and that's great. And, you know, we wouldn't be doing this show if it wasn't such a powerful thing and people weren't interested in what, you know, we had to discuss and talk about. Social media obviously has taken over. So what I would say to you with that is, like, you know, again, you know, I think that the media side of this is awesome. And there's a lot of really great coaches that do a really great job that get some incredible recognition because of the fact that their teams are putting up great numbers or keeping people out of the end zone on defense and things like that. But I do think that there's another layer to this, and it's the guys like myself, and I use myself just because you asked the question, that have been longtime NFL coaches doing it at a high level, some good years, some bad years. But at the end of the day, they've got special traits that people like to follow, and they know how to create chemistry and things like that. And I think those are the ones that, to me, are harder to find. But when you find a good one, I think it gives you a real chance. And what benefited me certainly was being in the building as a consultant. I tell people all the time, I'm like, you know, just be the same guy every day, but do your job to the best of your ability every day, and people will find you. I mean, I'm a consultant, and I'm the coordinator. I'm not even calling the plays. And then, you know, a couple years later, I'm sitting in this amazing chair.
Brian Schottenheimer joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Shotty, you talk about it there, the names and the reputations that exist for coaches across the league. And I know you went into your process a little bit before the season about how you developed some of the names that you wanted to put on your coaching staff. So, you know, as the season's coming to an end, and, you know, inevitably guys are going to get other jobs, or maybe somebody's going to get a promotion somewhere else, and you're going to end up losing some people in all likelihood. Does that process start over for you again to cultivate names, or is that something that you work to keep a running tab on of just like, hey, I got to have some names in my head just in the event that we're without a coach at this position?
Yeah, it's a little bit like personnel. You know how we say that personnel is always a 24/7, 365. I mean, you never lose sight of okay, you know, who are the top coaches in certain positions. You always have a depth chart. You always have a list of names where, hey, if I lose so and so, and hey, this they come and take this coach from me or whatever. You've always got a list. But I enjoy the process of, and I think you have to take your time to go through the process. What you don't want to do is, you know, just because I have a list of, let's say you lose a tight end coach or a defensive back coach, you've got a list of coaches. But I enjoy the process, and I think it's important to go through the process to make sure you don't just get a good coach. You get a good leader, a good man, a good father, a guy that's going to fit into your culture, along with a guy that can teach fundamentals and scheme. And hey, here's how you release, or here's how you block a nine technique on power, or here's how you reroute and cover two. All those things go into it, because when you add a member to your staff, you're really adding a member to your family, and you're bringing them into what you're trying to develop, which is, you know, one of the greatest cultures in professional sports that's hopefully becoming a championship team here next year. And that's something that takes a lot of time and sacrifice to get right.
You've gotten plenty of questions the last couple of weeks about Joe Milton, somebody you talked about a lot over the summer, and how he was somebody who needed, you know, more time on task and things throughout training camp, and that's why you guys were trying to give that to him. But I'm curious, there's some parallels, I think, in terms of capital that was given up and the position that they're in behind an established quarterback between the situation with Trey Lance and now the situation with Joe Milton. Did you learn anything or take anything from the experience with how you guys handled Trey Lance and are able to apply it or change it up differently with Joe Milton?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I think when you look at each situation, they're a little bit different. Like they both have attributes that I think are really, really incredible. I'll speak more to Joe just because, you know, Joe's a guy that's currently on our roster, and you know, just his arm talent is everybody wants to talk about the velocity, you know, and how far he can throw it. But you just talk about a guy like Joe Milton, I mean, you talk about the accuracy and the ability to make all the throws and off platform throws. And I mean, he is just incredibly talented, where, you know, Trey's a great quarterback in his own right, but he plays a little different. You know, he's more of a runner. And, you know, I think we saw something in Joe that wanted to make us make the trade, and he is not disappointed. Again, I think he's just, the future, it looks so bright for him, and, you know, learning this system and doing things he's never been asked to do, you know, from Michigan to Tennessee. It's been cool for me to watch him pick up on some of the things, and it takes time. I mean, it really does. It's not something that's built overnight. And, again, we're very, very excited to have Joe be part of our football team.
Coach, look, you know, it's been a struggle this year on defense. And as a first-time head coach and as really an offensive coach, as your background coming in, you know, how hard is it, you know, for you in your first year while you're on the sidelines and you're the head coach of the entire team and yet, you know, the side of the ball that you, you know, are really haven't been a part of is struggling? How is that, you know, for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the game. It's what you sign up for as the head coach. And believe me, there's been times this year where, you know, we haven't done enough good things on offense. And again, I'm going to be judged and we're going to be judged based on wins and losses and not, okay, what do stats look like on this side of the ball or all three phases, offense, defense, special teams. And again, I think one of my strong suits is when you're an offensive coach, you understand what causes you problems. And so when you go into meetings and you're in and around the staff or watching some of the things they're doing and we're talking and I'm telling them some of the things that I want, it's based on things that give me problems and things that kind of keep me up at night and things I'm like, man, this is kind of a pain in the ass. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of value in that. Game day is a little bit more difficult because you are trying to call the game and things like that. That's real. But at the end of the day, one of my strengths is my ability to kind of, number one, I work really, really hard, and then time management, something I think I'm really good at. But it's all part of the process, and every head coach goes through it.
Are there defensive coaches that you're just like, God, I hate facing their defenses? Like, who are the guys that give you the biggest problems?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, it's not even – I'm not even going to use a guy. I mean, it's guys that – you know, they do a great job with their disguises and coverage. They do a great job with their different blitz packages. They change up their fronts, things like that. There's certainly things that you're like, okay, oh, you look at the schedule, like you'll play somebody, you'll get a win and you'll get on the team plane or you'll get in the car to head home. And you're like, oh shoot, we're playing so-and-so next week. You're like, dang. And it literally, you're kind of like, oh man, because you just know it's going to be a unique week. It's going to be a different week. And I think that's really, that's on all three phases. I mean, literally, there's been times you're like, man, we play this special teams unit next week, or, hey, you know, we got to play this offense next week. And I think that just shows you how much respect we all have for one another and what we do in this business. And what we do is very, very difficult. And it's not just the X's and the O's. It's getting the X's and the O's in front of your players and making sure it's things that they can do well and then getting them to practice to do it at the highest level on game day.
Brian Schottenheimer with us here on 105 Through the Fan. Shotty, you've talked about how December football is a different animal and how teams rise or fall for various reasons. And you know, there's history tied to that. Your team obviously struggled in December this year. Was there anything that you're looking back on and you go, yep, there it is. I recognize that. I know that's something teams fall victim to in December, and we just fell victim to it this year.
Yeah, I mean, again, I totally agree that December football is different. I think you saw us last week kind of play when we played Washington, a kind of a December-type game, if you will. You know, we controlled the ball and, you know, we were at 38 minutes, whatever it was. We ran for a season high, 200-something yards, whatever. I think that is a little bit of December football. You're playing outside in the elements and, you know, it wasn't cold, but it wasn't warm either. And so I think that's part of it. And we didn't, you know, play that way throughout December. But at the end of the day, the biggest thing I look at when I look at the teams that are advancing into the playoffs or competing too is it's all about the ball and the turnover battle. And quite honestly, we did not do a good enough job with that in either phase. I think we're -7, -8, something like that. And quite honestly, that's terrible. And you just go pull up the top teams in the league. I think the Bears are the top team, whether 20 or +18 or something like that. And how many of those teams are in the playoffs? It's a pretty simple formula. And it's certainly something that we will correct, and we will be much, much better at that next year. Because if you don't, then usually you're going to be on the outside looking in when you get into the postseason.
And last one here for you, Coach. You obviously want to compete until the end. You've you know, really underlined that point in the last couple weeks. But with some of the CBA limitations that exist with practices and stuff, how much of these last couple games are also just an opportunity to, for lack of a better term, steal time on task for guys who you know are going to be back here next year?
Well, again, I think we try to do that all the time. I mean, we're always trying to develop our guys. A huge part of what what our job is as coaches is to develop young players. And for example, I'll use Jaden Blue. I mean, Jaden's a guy that, you know, has been getting better, you know, and he has been improving. Has it been up and down and inconsistent? Absolutely it has, but that's part of young players. But it doesn't mean that we're not excited to have Jaden. It doesn't mean we don't expect great things from Jaden. And we're always trying to do that. But at the same time, I talk about a lot. And again, it's not just the young players. It's everybody. When you talk about competing every day, it's all about winning, then there is a standard, and that standard has to be upheld. And whether you're going to play more young guys or they're trending to play, you know, because of the type of season or whatever it is, they still have to earn it, because that's what is required here if you're a member of the Dallas Cowboys.
Shoddy, it's been a terrific season hearing from you week in and week out. We really appreciate it. To you and yours, have a terrific offseason.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. Happy New Year. And I really do mean this. I never thought I'd enjoy having conversations with you guys every Friday, but you guys are great. And again, Will, nice to meet you, Bobby. Let's talk some ball a little bit more over the offseason.
Always, Shoddy. Yeah.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right. See you guys.
See you. That's Brian Schottenheimer. It's Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. We got, I'm Will Chambers in here today with Bobby Belt. Wow. Peyton Russell on the ones and twos. Chelsea, coordinate your video on YouTube, Twitch, and 105.3thefan.com. The news over the last few days, whether or not you want to look at it. And I know on the Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text yesterday, there's a lot of people like, man, he's gone. Who cares? I'm like, I don't disagree. 877-881-1053. Trayvon Diggs being cleared, picked up off waivers by the Green Bay Packers after the Cowboys sent him there. He spoke to media on, I still don't know what day it is.
Today is Friday.
Okay, so this would be Thursday. Quote, I still feel like I'm the best. Following his first practice in Green Bay, and Coach Matt LaFleur did not rule out the possibility that he could play in the regular season finale in Minnesota on Sunday.
I mean, communication can't look any worse than it was here in Dallas. And he was thrown out there for a bunch of snaps. So, if you want to have him play some man coverage, sure. Like, yeah, just, hey. Although that could always be a tell anytime that
he's on the field.
Diggs is out there. Oh, they're in man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, no, it's I
saw a tweet yesterday, Bobby, that said if the Packers get if Diggs gets trashed by the Bears in the playoffs, if that's how it plays out, and they, you know, have the 19th pick, that'll be the only positive thing that Trayvon Diggs did for the Cowboys this season.
You know, it's I was talking about this with somebody yesterday, and they were trying to figure out why now. Like, why do it now with Diggs? And they were going, okay, maybe it is just some disciplinary thing, like, hey, straw that broke the camel's back, the Christmas thing. Maybe it's as simple as that. But I was just, like, kind of jokingly suggesting, I was like, maybe they knew Green Bay liked Diggs, and they liked the idea of them, like, claiming Diggs and then just having that contract on their books. They just liked that.
I thought, like most did, that the news when it was starting, you know, to come down, you know, when KNC had it, when it just started, like, right, yeah. Alec, and he said it, I'm like, in for a workout with the Bears. And like, oh, please don't do it. Please don't do it.
Which, and I missed this. I was 2 hours behind everybody else on this because I went, like, I had just fallen asleep.
Yeah.
15 minutes before it all started breaking.
And look, you know, his DB coach, you know, with Green Bay, was his DB coach, you know, at Alabama and all that. I don't, this guy, things could turn around in Green Bay for him. You know, to me, he was just somebody that had zero interest in any kind of accountability over the last 2 years. And it was, the Cowboys had just had enough. And maybe he was that way because of how he felt about how certain things had happened over the course of time in different situations. You know, we can go down a list of all, you know, the stuff with the injuries and the rehabs and all that, and he goes into Green Bay and he wants to be totally accountable. I have no idea, but all I know is that this was untenable here
Yeah, I just, and I talked about this a little bit the other day when the news came out that he had been released. He was, physically right now, it does not look like he will ever be the same player again. So there's that. Now, can he get back to a level physically where he can still be really good? Sure. You have a hard time finding people who are saying, I think even in Diggs' camp, that they believe he'll athletically be the same player ever again. 100% of that is just not likely at this point. The other aspect of this is this organization praised DeMarvian Overshown in back-to-back off seasons for
attacking
his mentality, not just the way he attacked his rehab, but his mindset and like staying engaged and the way that he did things. That rehab, when you get knocked out for the year and you get the season-ending surgery and then you're doing different rehab things, a lot of guys can feel really isolated from the team and feel alone or feel, you know, just it can mess with your head a little bit. And some players have had that happen in the past, not just here in Dallas, but in with other teams too. It's a danger that every team is aware of, and they try to guard against of like, hey, don't make sure he doesn't feel too by himself, and like make sure he understands that he still feels like he's here. I think that's one of the reasons why they wanted him rehabbing in the building and not outside of it. But I think when he came back in 24, there were just a lot of people that went, oh, this is a different person. This is not the competitor. This is not the locker room presence. This is not the teammate that he was before. And not even necessarily like, oh man, he's a bad person now. But just they're like, this isn't the makeup we signed up for. Like, this isn't the guy that we believed that he was, the guy that we want to pay. This isn't the guy who has that edge out of practice and goes up to Dak Prescott and says, shut your BS up. That guy is not there anymore. This isn't the guy who took off his helmet and walked over to the Alabama sideline his sophomore year when he heard an NFL scout say, oh, that's Stephon Diggs' brother. And he walks over there and he goes, I'm Trayvon Diggs. I'm not Stephon Diggs' brother. Like, that guy just, he was gone when he came back. Now, maybe he finds that guy again in Green Bay. I actually would love it if he would, because he's one of the most fun players I've ever seen whenever he's on. The style of play that he has, I understand there's some risk-reward with it, but damn, it's fun in the same way that Joey Gallo's fun to watch it 40 home runs and how exciting it can be. And you just, I hope he's able to get that again, just not with Green Bay, because so that would obviously suck for Dallas.
He joins his BF, Micah Parsons, in Green Bay.
His BFF.
BFF.
Yeah. BF is shorthand for something else.
Right. Yeah. I'm not breaking any news here. Sorry about that. And Micah, as he does, you know, want to jump into the fray, into the conversation.
Yeah, so they had yesterday, Matt Eberflus, Clarence Hill had this tweet yesterday, said Cowboys defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus admitted things changed for the defense when they lost an all-pro pass rusher who can win quick, but you can't look back. And Micah quote tweeted it with a million crying laughing emojis. So, some people got onto his case a little bit. Like, dude, you're not even in Dallas anymore. What do you care?
Yeah, blah, blah. Let it go.
Even some Green Bay people were getting into his mentions about it. And he replied a few minutes later and said, y'all want me to feel bad? Jerry Jones slandered my name to Cowboys media and national media for months, so I do think I can react to comment if I want to. Hashtag respectfully. Which, Sean Sharif got circulated pretty heavily yesterday. In fact, his tweet now has 500,000 views on Twitter, where he said, why didn't you tell everyone how you tried to play agent only to back out after Jerry acquiesced to your terms? Did you not initiate talks with him only to cry victim so your agent didn't think you acted without him? So that generated some response. It generated a lot of response when Dez Bryant decided to quote tweet it and go, see, Cowboys media in Jerry's pocket. And look, I love Dez.
I like it,
Dez,
Poppy.
Dez is wrong here. Dez knows he's wrong here.
Yeah.
But Dez is also, you know, he goes to bat for the players because of how his experience went, where they tried to corner him on his contract negotiation.
Right.
And he felt like he got bad advice from the training staff that he felt like shortened his career. He will always 100% side with players and those things. I still to this day think Dallas probably owns most of the fault for the Micah negotiations going sideways. But Micah owns some of it, for sure. And it is probably best to just, hey, look ahead. Like, I mean, I don't know why you'd have anything else. But I understand also Trayvon Diggs is his buddy. And he's his teammate now, and he's going to have a lot to say and a lot to chirp about with it.
You know, Bobby, to me, what is not said sometimes says more than anything about no matter what you want to look at.
What did Jerry say in the Netflix documentary? He said, we're not saying words, but you're talking to me, baby.
Yeah, he's right. Look, Trayvon Diggs, this whole situation with the concussion, you want us to really believe that it was a TV? Come on. Wait, if that was the case, why didn't you just say it from the beginning?
Jesse Holly said on DallasCowboys.com the other day, he's like, the guy who just willingly walked away from $500,000 this offseason with his training. Like, clearly, that flippant with his money is not going to just pay somebody to install his TV.
Right. But Bobby, it's just like, just say it. This is not something that is like, I mean, how embarrassed are you really that you did that? Like, that, it makes no sense. So by him not saying anything about it at all and this whole, like, secrecy around it tells me that that is not the story. It's not a TV or that just, it can't be it. So my question...
I don't believe it was a TV. I also don't believe it's the common, like, super aggressive, ridiculous rumor that goes around Twitter that I don't believe it's that either. In fact, I know it's not that. But, he introduced a lot of that doubt. But to be fair, and just to be even here, Diggs has a case to say, well, the Cowboys introduced a lot of that doubt, too, by just...
No doubt.
When Jerry or others would get asked about it, they'd go,
just tell us what happened then.
Yeah.
Just do it. This is... You all are new to the Cowboys. They're talked about on every platform nationally, let alone locally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say what it is. And to me, the same thing with the Micah Jerry thing. You and I talked a lot during that period where I'm just like, here are my questions. This is very simple. What changed?
Mm-hmm.
What changed after the conversation that Jerry and Micah had? What agreement in that, or what was different from what David Mulligetta got from Jerry that made that camp go, no? Very simply, and yet none of which has, no party has come out and said which one or the other. So, thus, tells me that both sides very much, like you said, are to blame in this and don't really want to expose their parts of it because of pride and don't want to look like they're wrong.
Yeah. Everybody, what is it? The whole thing of like, there's three sides to every story.
Yeah.
Your side, my side, and the truth, or whatever it is.
Well, right,
it usually shares portions of
which
both.
Is why I love screenshots.
Remember that, guys. If you ever text Will Chambers, Will Chambers loves to screenshot you. That's what he just said.
Hey, look, there's no ambiguity here. This is what was said.
Yeah.
You know, you interpret for what, you know, you want. That's it. So, yeah, I think for Micah, I don't want to defend the Cowboys on a lot of stuff. The way that they handled it's almost like the Luka deal. Like, I get trading Luka. I get it. The manner in which you did it, the return that you got for it, the fact that you didn't even like explore other teams to get into the fray to try to like maybe get a better deal than you did, that's the bigger issue for me. I understand. I was the one saying after the Green Bay loss in the playoffs, this is going to sound crazy. I would trade Micah Parsons. I think he's a terrific player, but I think you're guys away from being guys away, and you can get the most insane haul ever. Instead, they got the smallest amount of return on that trade they could have possibly have ever gotten because of the manner in which they approached it.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, there was a case to be made for making the move. And I still think ultimately, now that they've got Quinn and Williams, they've got extra picks, I still think the Cowboys are going to come out of this generally not looking as bad as it did initially.
I agree. I mean,
I think, not as bad as the Luka deal.
Right. I think that it's going to work out to a certain extent. But man, why do you do it this way when you could have handled it way better and gotten more?
Yeah.
I don't for the life of me understand it. They're still playing football, by the way. Giants, Sunday.
Yeah, that still is on the docket. Brian Schottenheimer at 8:20 today for the last time this season.
There you go. I love the fact that even when, you know, the Cowboys are out of the playoffs, there's really no stories really about the Cowboys, and then boom, out of nowhere. Yep, we're waving Diggs.
Always something.
Let's get signed, and then Micah Parsons jumps in. God, I love this team. All right, the payload's next. What we got?
Guys, we have a tragic bathroom story to get to, and AI has already ruined 2026 already. That's next on The Fan.
Trayvon Diggs released from the Cowboys today. The man that broke the story, Todd Archer of ESPN, joins us now here in the G-Bag Nation via the D&M Leasing Hotline. Todd, happy Tuesday, bro. Crazy day. Thought it's supposed to be an off day. Are you as surprised as we all were when you got the news?
Just at the timing of it, right? Because I think we're all writing it down that the Cowboys would save a little more than $12 million against the cap next year when they release Diggs in the offseason. Yada, yada, yada. Like that, I think we all knew it was coming. The fact that it came with one game to go was a little surprising. And while I didn't have a hair appointment like Jane did today, I was outside raking the leaves in my backyard when I got the text message saying that this was going down. And I thought it was like 15 minutes behind everybody. So I wasn't even sure. And then I tweeted it. So I'm like, oh, okay. I thought everybody had this already. So, yeah. So I got some yard work done in addition to tweeting about Trayvon Diggs.
Todd, do you have you pointed out that maybe it's something you thought was going to happen after the season in the springtime, something like that. Do you have any indications of why now?
Oh, well, I had one guy over there tell me that a culmination of events, and obviously it's out there now that he wasn't on the flight home, that he requested to stay in Dallas or stay in Washington and visit with family and was denied the request. Probably a request that should have been made from well before when you're in the locker room after the game to then ask that question.
Sure.
I know guys in the past that have not taken the team flight home for a variety of reasons when the schedule allows it. But I know that those requests were made pretty early in a week, just so everybody would know, but he was the only guy that didn't fly home. I wouldn't say that is why he's released. I think as Steven has said, I don't know how many times on your network about the coaching situation and on defense, it's a full body of work.
Right.
I think this decision was a full body of work when you add in the questioning Matt Eberflus's scheme and how he wants to played and what he wants, what the coaches told us when he wasn't activated immediately off injured reserve, that he has to do everything right. Clearly, it wasn't just an on-field thing. And then this. And then add in the fact that he has as many pass deflections and interceptions as we do this year. Why not make the move now if you're going to make it 5 weeks from now?
Todd, how will he be remembered then? You know, when you look at it, you know, fans have their thoughts, players have their thoughts. How's Todd Archer going to remember Diggs' career with the Cowboys?
A good player that had a couple of great seasons and then had it kind of fall apart because of injury. And there's, I'm not saying this is the case with him specifically, although when you can read between the lines when you hear that, you know, he didn't really work the hardest at his rehab and he wasn't here this offseason for the rehab. He spent all the time in Florida. If you watch some of the, I forget if it was YouTube or whatever deal that he put out some of his videos on, it wasn't like he was killing it in the videos that we saw and the couple that I saw. It would look like the trainer really had to get on him to do everything he was supposed to do. There are players when you come into the league, like I'll equate it to baseball. You're a fastball pitcher and no one can touch your fastball. And all of a sudden you lose your shoulder and you have no idea how to pitch.
Hmm.
I think it might be along that line. It's like physically he was just gifted. He could freelance, he could guess. And physically he was gifted enough to make up for those non-technical technique ways you want to go about it, intercept a pass. Well, now that you're dinged up and your knees aren't the same and your speed's not the same, you try those same things and it doesn't work anymore. And so then can you play the position still and still be successful? And I think that's kind of the crossroad that he is in at the moment. Broadus, you're the scout. You tell me if you see something that's different.
No, you're not wrong, Todd. You're not wrong.
That's kind of how I view it. Like, the injuries kind of sapped him of some of his superpowers, and it made him just kind of a guy a little bit.
Was his complaints – and okay, I shouldn't say complaints. Was his concerns about the defense – Is he right about what he was saying?
I don't think he was wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm parsing words here. I think he is a guy who was better playing man. No kidding. Like, we all can see that, right?
Right, right.
And so then that gets into the willingness of the guy running the scheme to fit a defense that fits your players, not the other way around. So right. That's been a question we've had forever, you know, and you can say the same thing about Deron Bland, who's a better man corner. What did they tell us about Savone Revel?
Yeah.
You know, hey, long, he can press, he's a good man, you know, man guy.
Yeah.
Well, then if you're a defense that plays predominantly zone, then how does that fit what, you know, that those two things don't go together. In a lot of respects. So I don't think Diggs was wrong in asking to play more man or mixing it in or doing some different stuff. But like, I think we've turned zone, or some of us have turned zone coverage into like the Pythagorean theorem, that it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
Back in my glory days of playing high school basketball, man, I love playing zone defense because none of the crap was ever going to be my fault. I could always blame the other guy. You just had to cover your own area.
Like, right.
I know I'm bringing it down to like a...
No, you're not level, wrong. You're not wrong.
But it's not like, hey, that should be, you know, if your eyes are always on the quarterback and you know what zone, where you're supposed to be, you know, and the fact that these guys struggled with, I think we'd all agree that like, there's nothing about the Eberflus scheme where we'd say, man, this is really tricky to figure out.
Right.
You know, we don't know where these guys are going to be and where they're going to come from. The fact that this team has struggled with communication of this over 17 weeks, now going into the 18th week, is telling. And then for all the folks that want to bring in this varied multiple attack and let's dream of Brian Flores.
Right.
Boy, I don't know how that would go next year either, unless you just you took out everybody.
We're extremist. We're extremist, yeah. Todd. We like to go from one extreme to the other, is what we want to do. I'll ask you this though, and first off, and I know you're not in the business of firing guys and stuff like that, or wanting to fire guys. That's left up to radio people for sure. Do you feel like that Matt Eberflus will be replaced after this season?
It's not trending in the right direction, to steal a term from Shoddy that he's used on us about injured guys this year.
Okay.
I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
Jerry's comments on your station have been kind of telling, and I think today when he's like, look, when he says this isn't all about Matt Eberflus and what's gone wrong, I think he's right, because there's been some kind of disconnect between the coaching at all three levels. And so maybe not the D line, I guess that's been solid. But there's been a lack of communication, lack of understanding. I think the players that have been brought in haven't played up to par. Mostly there's exceptions, Clowney and Quinn Williams and Kenny Clark. Oh, by the way, those are three guys that weren't even here when the season started.
Yeah.
So they're veteran guys that have been around. So it's on everybody, but you guys know how this goes. Everybody doesn't take the fall. It comes down to one guy. And in this case, it's one guy plus however many assistants that they would move on from as well. So, I mean, you can't fire, you can't fire 53 players. So yeah, I think that's why I see it trending in that direction.
Should Jerry Jones receive some of the blame for hiring Matt Eberflus?
Yeah, I struggle with that one to a degree but I will say this. I'm sure it was recommended to Brian Schottenheimer. Hey, we like this Matt Eberflus guy. He was here with us. And so why don't you talk to him?
Yeah.
So if I'm a first-year head coach and I have my boss telling me, hey, why don't you talk to this guy?
Exactly.
Is that tacitly saying, you better hire this guy. This is the guy I want you to hire. I might be, you know, splitting the thinnest of hairs when it comes to that stuff. But I think if Brian Schottenheimer had a guy that he wanted in mind,
yeah,
I think he said, "Nah, Jerry, this is the guy I want." I think he could have played that card. But again, when you're a first year head coach and you have your boss telling you something, maybe you read into what was said a little bit more when it comes to those situations.
Yeah.
Here's what I wonder from the Cowboys' perspective on Matt. And I think Matt is a good coach, and he's been a good coach for a long time.
Sure.
Not to sound like Jason Garrett. I just did. I apologize for that. And he's had good defenses, and he didn't become an idiot overnight. Like,
sure.
He's a good fundamental football coach, and we've all seen it. I just wonder if there are lingering scars from what happened in Chicago to him that the Cowboys didn't investigate enough to see what went down there in terms of connections and relating and all that kind of stuff. And because this has been there's been three games where you said, okay, yeah, the defense looks pretty good.
Yeah.
There's been 13 games where you're like, oh, boy. Yeah. How are they giving that up?
Could he have used the year off, Todd? Could he have used the year off like the Dan Quinns? And I know McCarthy. McCarthy, yeah. I knew you were going to say that because I know you're like me about the whole Mike McCarthy thing. But could he have used the year maybe to sit back and kind of evaluate where he was at? Or would he have come back a year later with the same Rod Marinelli beliefs and stuff like that, even though he grew up in the Rob Ryan crazy ass scheme? You know what I'm saying?
Right. That's the funny part is that he came here as a 3-4 linebacker coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a 4-3
exactly
guy.
Exactly.
So, I guess my answer would be yes, he should have taken the year off, but I'm using that based on what's happened during the first 16 games of the season.
Yeah.
So, now at the time, like, you know, there's, to steal the phrase, there's only 32 defensive coordinator jobs too. So, and it was at a place that he knew the ownership well, he knew the scouting department well. So it wasn't like he was coming into a completely foreign situation. So maybe that influenced him to want to not take that time off. But
yeah,
you know, hindsight right now, you'd say, yeah, he might've been better served to take that time off.
Todd Archer, ESPN, with us here on The Fan. One last one. Do you think a team will pick up Diggs?
No. And I don't say that because of the money that he would be owed for the last game, however much that is, I forget off the top of my head. And you know, the remainder of the contract, well, that doesn't matter. None of it's guaranteed. They could just move on from him after the year, and it wouldn't be on the hook for anything. But I think they'll. Don't you think they'll turn on the tape?
Yeah. Yeah.
And see what we've seen? Like,
yeah.
And I'm not saying like Trayvon, I think Diggs can have another good season, and it might be born out of the fact that he wants to prove everybody at the star wrong. But I think the days of what Trayvon Diggs was in 2021, 22, I don't think you'll see that player again.
Todd, can't thank you enough for the time, my man. Get back to those leaves and enjoy the rest of the season. Just a few more days.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There he goes, Todd Archer, ESPN, with us here on The Fan on the day that Trayvon Diggs was released from the Dallas Cowboys. We will have more on that all throughout the program. Mark Schlereth, NFL Insider, coming up at 4:40. But it's TD Tuesday. Brian Broaddus.
Oh, I get to read again.
Second installment of Brian Broaddus co-hosting TD Tuesday. Best touchdowns from the NFL weekend next year on The Fan. Well, it's been a heck of a day in Cowboys land. My goodness. Trayvon Diggs. Adios, my friend. How will you remember Trayvon Diggs? 877-881-1053. Great to have you in the G-Bag Nation on a TD Tuesday, locked and loaded for the next 5 hours. I'm Eric Chiafalo alongside the Super Bowl champion, Brian Broaddus. We got Jacob Ray. Are we still doing new guy Jake, or have you graduated from that?
I think it's degenerate Jake now because I gamble.
That's right.
That's a new one, yep.
That's right. Degenerate Jake in the building, repping his Texas Tech Red Raiders. Prepping his body for some Orange Bowl action. We'll have Ari Temkin live from Miami. Wonder what type of shenanigans Ari's getting into as he's getting set to cover Texas Tech and Oregon.
Ari is a professional. He's probably asking them, you know, the questions, the hard-hitting questions. What's the identity of these teams?
Hey, Coach Lanning, what's the identity of your football team?
See, Ari was a big identity guy, and it used to drive me nuts.
I know.
On the post-game show. I go, let me tell you their identity, Ari. Their identity is they're a bunch of damn losers right now. And they're not going to be any better because their identity is they don't know how to draft. They don't know, you know, I just would go into the whole, let me tell you the identity.
Really milking that identity conversation. Yeah, we'll talk identity and everything else, college football style, with Ari Temkin at 6 o'clock. And just got the update, breaking news, that Todd Archer is going to hop on with us at 4 o'clock. He was first on the Trayvon Diggs release news today. So we'll chat with him at 4 o'clock, TD Tuesday, 420, Mark Schlereth. So we're partying up in here, and it's great to have you in. Now, I mean, Broadus, what do you know?
I think so. I think this is the hope. This is the hope that maybe that they can get somebody to claim him. It's a long shot, but with a week in the season, maybe somebody doesn't want to battle. I asked some people in the organization. I go, listen, by doing this, do you know if somebody would claim him? Reached out to Gang of Seven. I want to see what they say. The contract isn't terrible if you look at it overall. It's not a terrible one.
If a team wanted to assume
If a team wanted to assume, and so by doing this, and I mean, without even looking at the text, folks, I feel you. I know you're telling me there's no way in hell anybody's going to claim Diggs and da-da-da-da-da. I totally understand that. This is just a swing for the fences. See with the last week of the season if they could put him out there and somebody does it. Will he play? Probably not for somebody. But maybe somebody doesn't want to have to battle for him or they think enough of him. You know, I mean, he's telling Jane Slater he's healthy, all the right things. The tape hasn't been great. So, you know, maybe a change of venue would be fine. But this is the Cowboys' way of just trying to say, listen, if you can go land on another team, by all means, go do it. We'll give you that opportunity. So here we are.
Yeah, I mean, so looking at it here, look, Field Yates is saying that if a team wanted to go ahead and claim Diggs off waivers, which is what the Cowboys are hoping for
That's what they're hoping for. I mean, hey, it's not likely going to happen, but that's a little bit of somewhat of their plan.
Because that team would be on the hook for the $472,000 that he is due in base salary for Week 18.
Right.
And then it would be another $58,000 and change if he's active for the Week 18
game. Right.
Which is hard to imagine. I think even if a team did claim him, can't imagine they'd throw him into the line of fire with just a handful of days to prepare, especially seeing how difficult it is for him to grasp the scheme that he's been in all season long.
Yeah, I don't think they would throw him into, but what if a playoff team claimed him?
Right, a playoff team where you're like, we'll eat the $472,000 just to have you, and then we'll get you ramped up, and then playoff game, especially if it's a team that has the bye week, you know, the one seed team.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to fathom a team wanting to go ahead and do that just under $500,000 for 1 week of the regular season here. And most people are pointing to the Bears because of the Al Harris connection. And I don't even know what type of need they really have at the corner spot right now. If Micah was still playing with Green Bay, I'm sure he'd be trying to get up in their ear saying, hey, bring my guy back.
Let me ask this question. Jake, you got your ears on?
Oh, that's right, man. They're Bears. That's perfect. Bears insider.
Jake is a guy who understands the Chicago Bears backwards and forwards. Jake, you need a corner. What's your situation over there?
So, Nashawn Wright, he got toasted the other day at San Francisco. He gave up 6 of 7 reception or 6 of 7 targets for 112 yards. I mean, they were picking on him the whole game. You know, C.J. Gardner-Johnson slid into that little nickel role since Kyler Gordon's been out.
Yep.
But, I mean, if you want to bring in Diggs to fight with Nashawn Wright for that third spot, he probably start at the 4, but I mean, if Nashawn Wright keeps getting toasted, I don't see why he can't take over that spot.
Okay, Nashawn Wright, who has been...
Everybody's talking about Nashawn Wright as being, and for the most part of the season, though, he has been kind of a turnover machine.
He has.
In a good way of creating turnovers.
Yeah, he's been a pick machine. I mean, he reminds you of Trayvon that year, not to the extent, obviously, he didn't have double-digit interceptions, but, like, he'll go in there and fight for the ball. Like, he's punching at fumbles. He's the one who stripped Jalen Hurts on that on that tush bush when the Bears went and played the Eagles. So, I mean, he's got his nose around the football, and he knows how to take the ball away. So, that's good.
Yeah, it's been one of those just volatile seasons for him. Like, he's gotten roasted plenty all year, the latest versus the Niners being the most recent and obvious and egregious. But, yeah, he has had the interceptions to sort of save himself and make a bit of a name for himself here. Okay, so that does paint a picture that maybe the Bears could use him. Him being Trayvon Diggs, who was released earlier today. Todd Archer broke the news. He'll join us at 4 o'clock today to break it all down. Interesting timing. And, you know, I guess, Broadus, you're just saying, hey, this wasn't anything necessarily specific.
No,
we all
wasn't.
Knew this was heading for a divorce here.
Yeah.
But this is just a Hail Mary attempt. Maybe a team will pick him up, eat some of that money. Cowboys get off the hook. How will you remember Trayvon Diggs? 877-881-1053. 254, I will remember Trayvon getting paid and then making business decisions on the field. I think he was doing that this whole time. I mean, he was never really the tackle machine.
I remember the Cincinnati game. He had back-to-back plays that basically saved that game, and that was several years ago. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think he was – and you know, there was – talk about the surgically repaired knee. Was that the problem? No, it was the other knee. There were so many things that he was dealing with, you know, with, and I'm not trying to make excuses. I just know there's people in the organization that are very grateful that he's going to be gone.
For sure.
That you know, that like, listen, hey, we don't have to. And listen, he's not going to be the last one to be gone. We're going to be talking about a defensive staff that's going to have to be evaluated. If you listen to Jerry Jones talk, there's a lot of things going on with this Cowboys defense that hasn't been good. And Diggs is only part of that.
6'8", good pull. I'll remember Diggs for D's nuts.
D's nuts, yep.
That was an all-time Diggs moment.
Yep.
If we were doing top 10 Diggs moments with his tenure here with the Cowboys, I think D's nuts would probably be in that top three or four. That's a great call right there by 6'8". But yeah, the writing's been on the wall for sure, dating back to the offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Walchuk and plenty of people have been Diggs had been healthy going into the offseason last year, they would have been looking to trade him.
Yeah.
Of course, he was coming off the injury, so he was pretty much untradeable. And then he does the whole thing where he skips out on the offseason rehab stuff in the facility.
Yeah.
So he punted on $500,000. And Jerry Jones and company, they were clearly not happy with that. Jerry and Steven both were talking about Diggs in a way that you don't usually hear them talk about individual players. They were pretty dang frustrated. And then you get into this season, and he's been awful, and he's been complaining about the scheme. And the funny part about that is, to me, though, is even when they've done what he wanted, which is play man coverage, he's still gotten toasted.
Yes.
So I don't believe him when he says he's still healthy.
Yeah.
I don't believe that at all. Yeah. I mean, he's had some really difficult knee injuries. Like, those aren't things that you just bounce right back from and here we go, we're all good. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is definitely something that we knew was inevitable, but it is certainly surprising that it happened today. 877-881-1053, 907, good riddance to Diggs. If a player doesn't produce, move on from that player, give another player an opportunity. Now we can do that with the rest of the defense as well and the coaching staff, no question. 817 says, I hope he stays in the NFC East. Yeah, I know. I saw some people were like, man, I hope he doesn't go and he's going to go to Green Bay now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, let a team be fooled into thinking Trayvon Diggs is still a good player. Like, please have a team think he's starting caliber and pay him some money. And especially at a team like in the NFC East or a team that that you're going to go up against, because that will backfire in a huge way. I don't see anybody on here that is remembering Diggs. I haven't seen one text. We are getting inundated right now. Not one text is, I'll remember him for all those awesome interceptions he had that one season.
Yeah. Well, it looks like there's one group I just looking over at. It says, I remember having two all-pro corners, Diggs and Bland, and never having the best corner duo since they rarely played together.
Yeah, it was one of the weirdest things ever, where you could almost never get both of those guys on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
They both had their injury issues and weird stuff going on.
5-6-1. I'll remember when Diggs decided not to tackle Kittle in the playoffs. That's the play that stands out to me the most. That was the play where I showed up the next day. You get bounced out of the playoffs. That was a big time, high leverage moment late in that game. Kittle's bobbling the ball, and Diggs just totally avoids it. Yeah. And that was when it's like, okay, why would you pay this guy? And it's another example, and one of the most egregious ones too, because it's not like with some of these guys you pay and then all of a sudden they randomly get hurt or something like that. Like, you knew who Diggs was.
Right.
You knew who Diggs was, and you still fell in love with him in a way that gave him the big money contract. And you can count a ton of guys on this Cowboys roster that once you paid him, they were, you know, they were less versions of themselves.
He's not the only one.
Not the only one.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, one of the more egregious ones, because that was not a surprise.
Yeah.
Not a surprise at all. We also have the, I think Terrence Steele is another one.
Yeah.
Where he just had, you paid him after the ACL injury.
Sure.
It wasn't like you paid him and then, oh crap, he got hurt. Like, that's a bummer. Couldn't have planned for that.
Right.
You paid him after the ACL injury for no reason. And so hopefully they it's gone both ways because you've had guys where, dang, I wish you would have paid him. Jordan Lewis, DeMarcus Lawrence, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and Jerry referenced that with Sean and Bobby earlier today. But it's one of those deals where I think for the most part, when you think about the Diggs tenure here, it won't be about the interceptions. It'll be about all the nonsense and the unprofessional way that he approached things, the concussion stuff that he had this year with the TV story. Hopefully we get maybe some more details on that at some point.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how many people are buying that. Well, that's Todd Archer at 4:00. Like,
what about the what happened at home? The concussion thing?
The home concussion. He's talking about it being a TV.
Yeah.
Maybe. Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that's not the only Diggs story floating around the world today in the NFL, as you have Stephon Diggs, his brother, Patriots wide receiver, facing strangulation and assault charges. Yes. Not a good situation for him. He's trying to just pay this thing off and move on here, just pay the victim. And it's apparently a lady who was his personal chef from this season.
Oh, wow.
So they've been business partners basically since just before the season started. She claims she hasn't been paid, and she's basically owed like a month's pay.
Oh, wow.
And then he got super ticked off about it when she called him out for it, and allegedly he put his hands on her and that kind of deal. So
how could you not pay somebody that was working for you that way? I mean, a chef, somebody that's feeding you every single day. How do you not handle that? You know, and again, we get paid every Tuesday in the National Football League. I'm sure he gets paid quite a bit of money. Don't know exactly what he makes a week, but probably enough to pay staff to be able to handle his situation. It's amazing to me that these guys, with how much money they do make, that they just let things go by, you know, let things fall through and all that. And here's somebody that was, you know, that's cooking for you. Now, come on, man. It's amazing to me some of these things that happen with some of these players.
I know. It is pretty nuts. The fact that, and she says like the agreement was that she would be paid on a weekly basis.
It's turned out that
it's been a monthly basis, and he's behind a month according to her.
He gets a check every Tuesday in the NFL, direct deposit check into his account. Now he might have a million other things going on. But if that's the case, if you can't afford to pay the staff that's working for you or trying to keep you, you know, keep you fed and all that, then you don't need to be having a personal chef. You could eat at the Bills the Patriots facility, you know, when that's going down.
Yeah, I mean, I think the personal chef would be that would be one of the first things, though. If I, especially a professional athlete,
well, somebody that's very good at nutrition and stuff, and not going to let you eat a bunch of crap. You know, yeah. I mean, it's worth having somebody that, you know, that like every day you're going to get a meal. You like when you're going to work, you got your eggs cooked the way you want them. I mean, you go to, like, say there's some of these facilities that are really, really good. The Cowboys facility is wonderful when it comes to eating breakfast and a lunch and taking care of you that way. But there's some places that are not. And clearly Diggs felt like it was important enough to have a chef. But if you're going to have staff on board and you make that determination, I'm telling you, you got to take care of that. You can't let that just, you know, go a month or two and not even, you know, pay for it. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then allegedly get violent when you get called out for
it. Yeah, exactly.
Crazy day for the Diggs family.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Trayvon Diggs officially released from the Dallas Cowboys. Now we cross our fingers. Okay, this is apparently the Cowboys' hope that a team picks him up and eats the remaining salary that he is owed for the rest of the season, which is one more week, and it's just under $500,000. So maybe it's the Bears, maybe it's another team, but there's only a handful of teams that it would even make sense for.
They're looking for a team to claim this contract is what they're looking for. That's what they're – and folks, again, we totally get it. The likelihood of that is not going to happen. But that's exactly where they're at with this Diggs situation.
All right, just getting started here in the G-Bag Nation. Great to have you in on a TD Tuesday. Let's get you the G-Bag of the Day champion and the Wooly Bully Top 10. I have the weirdest New Year's Eve drops across the country next year in the nation.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan right now, brought to you by Ford and your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. We bring to you our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Happy New Year's Eve.
Indeed. So a pretty slow day for you at work yesterday, huh? Not much happening?
Nothing really happens around here at all.
Yeah. So I know there are lots of stories out there, and we've talked about the plane and everything, but does it just kind of feel like this thing has been broken for a while and either side was just looking for that one more thing to be like, let's just be done with this?
And I don't think they needed to look for one more thing. Right. I think this was inevitable. You know, I think possibly they would have held their breath and finished out the season, hoping that he had stayed healthy so they could come to this conclusion before the start of the next league year. But I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think there was any way he was on this team for 2026. So I just felt like everything they had gone through, all the shenanigans he had pulled, that they were just out on him. And this just gave him one more reason to move on. You know, we sit here and we talk about culture, right? And everybody wants about culture. Well, one guy doesn't want to participate in the culture. So, or maybe two guys didn't want to participate in the culture, one before the season started and one before just the season ends. And maybe that improves the culture in that locker room.
You know what? I was able to read through that coded language and figure out who you were talking about. You've done this for a long time. You've talked with people before they got contracts, after they got contracts. Is there any way to really, really tell if a player or a person is like just innately driven before you give them a contract extension? Like, sorry if that sounds rude to Trayvon Diggs, but I feel like there's a lot of people out there who they would be like, I'm playing for the team, but I'm also playing for me. Like, if somebody slights me, I don't care. I'm going to be back out on that field, and I'm going to try to be as good as I can. Versus I know a lot of people think that once he got paid, he was like, eh, whatever.
And I think a lot of that goes into the decision if you are going to pay guys big money on long term. Do I trust this guy that he's going to continue to play football, to play at the level that has earned him the right to ask for this type of guaranteed money? And I think that they, kind of worked their way through it and said, yeah, we think so. And then I know injuries got in the way. But you get the feeling that it was take my money and run, right? And I think that was one of the decisions they had to make on Micah Parsons. I think they were very worried that if they guaranteed him that type of money, was he going to be a team player? Was he going to be part of this organization? And you heard Jerry talking about it over and over again. If I'm paying a player that much money, he's got to be a leader. He's got to be a Michael Irvin type or a Troy Aikman type or a Dak Prescott type, right? And I think that they were kind of leery that he was going to do that. Now, he made it look like he was when he started hanging out with the team, staying in the locker room, playing ping pong, but he didn't do any of that stuff previously.
Right.
He didn't even work out with the team in the off season previously. And if you're going to pay a guy that much money, you better do that.
Okay.
Well, they paid him that much money, and he forfeited $500,000,
right,
because he wanted to work out privately on his own. So that speaks volumes of where he was. And I'll guarantee you that when they saw that the guaranteed money had run out and they could get out of this for $5.8 million for the remainder of the prorated signing bonus, it was like, okay, we just need one more excuse and end it earlier than they probably had already decided.
So I definitely hear what you're saying, especially about the Cowboys' philosophy. I guess sometimes I do really wonder, do you think that the Cowboys make a mistake by sometimes expecting players who, like you were saying, maybe haven't shown that leadership to start being more of a leader because they got paid? That feels like a fundamental flaw in logic.
No, I think that one of the reasons, I mean, he was kind of fine for a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
But as soon as he got the contract, you know, look, I know this isn't a big deal, and I keep repeating this, but for some reason it sticks in my throat. Watching last year, maybe some of the previous year, when they're out doing their pregame or pre-practice stretch and everybody's lined up in their position order on the field doing it, and Diggs and Parsons are off on the side doing their own thing.
Right.
It just struck me as wrong. Are you a part of this team or not? And I know for a fact that John Fossil was one of them to call them out. He called them out and said, are you part of this damn team or not? Because what are you doing over here? No one else wanted to confront them, right? Well, I think they needed to be confronted. And so, everybody wants to talk about culture. Well, okay, here's your culture. You're part of the team or you're not. And now he's not. And somebody else can inherit the headache as far as I'm concerned.
And speaking,
ooh, there's some fire right there.
I love it. And speaking of dealing with that headache, I feel like the headache was alleviated a lot because maybe Al Harris was a big advocate for Trayvon Diggs and obviously a big part of his success when he was here. Do you think Trayvon losing an advocate and somebody that can represent him in a good light like that kind of wrote off his time here? Because I thought the writing was on the wall when Al Harris left that things might be different around here, and you start to hear that maybe his connections weren't the best around here too. Do you think that played a part in it?
How'd you get so smart?
Oh, man.
I listen to you. That's how I got smart.
I agree with you on that totally. And wouldn't be surprised if he advocates it for him again at the end of 24 hours, right?
Right, yeah.
And here's the other thing. You know, if you pick him up, are you picking him up just for the playoffs, one game in the playoffs? Because he's got no more guarantees in his base salaries, so you wouldn't owe him anything other than a game check and whatever the playoff share is if you claim him on waivers now. And if you don't and he goes unclaimed, then you can sign him to whatever for one game and say, okay, you know, we're going to give you a chance to resurrect your career. Now, does he want that chance? I don't know. But to me, when he got the opportunity to play, it just seemed half-hearted to me. I just didn't see the level of play that we were used to seeing from him. And here's another thing. He had that per-game bonus in his contract. He would make $58,800 per game being active.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
He ended up being inactive now, counting this week, 9 games.
Wow.
And that comes to $529,200 that he didn't earn because it was going to total $1 million. So they got to pay that at the end of the year, and I believe it goes on next year, and fine. And then the $5.8 million of the prorated signing bonus that they still had to account for over the next 2 years. But they're off the hook on $14 million base salary.
Yeah.
I think all that goes together. But when you look at it in totality, yeah, I agree. I think Al Harris was kind of the buffer between him and whatever else was going on with the Cowboys. And let's remember, Brian Schottenheimer was here, right? He just didn't have a voice. You know, he was a consultant. Then he was the kind of offensive coordinator, but only in title only. But he saw stuff that was going on. He saw stuff going on with both of those guys. And I guarantee you, knowing him and just seeing how he's kind of portrayed himself to not only us, but the team, you know that had to bug him pretty badly, knowing how those guys were behaving.
Sure. Yeah. Now that...
So the whole thing about, you know, not on the plane, okay, fine. It just, you know, saved him $58,000.
Yeah. Mick, that's why I think this became a bigger story. I have assumed for some time that he would not be on the Cowboys in 2026. It was just the timing of it before the last game. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think most people think the roster move itself is a particular surprise whatsoever.
No, and you know what? I think had Deron Bland been healthy enough to finish out the season, they would have left him on injured reserve for the rest of the year.
Right.
Because when Jerry talked about health being part of the decision, it wasn't bad health. It was to keep good health so when they released him, they didn't have to account for any injury lingering on into the offseason. They wanted him healthy.
For sure. You know, we talked a lot about quarterback situation. I feel like we all have a good handle of how that's going to play out on Sunday. Is there anybody else in particular on the Cowboys that you think either A, is lined up to get more playing time, or B, you would want to see get maybe a few more snaps, a little bit more playing time on Sunday?
I think maybe the two rookie running backs.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind, you know, take a look at them. Now, a lot has to do with, I don't know if it does or not. Williams has had a wonderful season. I think he's already proven that they would like to re-sign him for next year, and he's got a shoulder. So do you move on and say, okay, Malik Davis, we think your eye's okay, that you can see well enough to play, but we're going to need another guy or two at the running back position and maybe take a look at those guys, give them a series here, series there. I would like to see that because I still think, if Jaden Blue is growing up and understands the responsibilities of being in the NFL, he's got something to offer you. And it's something they need, I think, at the running back position or just on the offense to add more speed. And I think we saw it in training camp before he got hurt, saw it briefly in some practices. Now let's take a look. Let's see. And I don't mean to use it at the detriment of trying to win the game because I still think it's important. And I know you guys don't, but that's okay. I just think if we're gonna do this and you want to see, then let's see with some things like that. Let's see the young linebackers out there. I'm good with that. I was going to say, and let's see some young cornerbacks. Well, that's all they got is young.
Right, right, right. You know, I know we've had the Darren Woodson conversation until we're blue in the face. We're in total agreement on that. To you, is Jason Witten a first ballot Hall of Famer? Because now he is in the finalist group as well.
Yeah, I think the only thing that would get in the way of Jason would be if Woody gets in and somebody's going to, we're not putting two Cowboys in the same year. You know, that's kind of how those guys think.
Right.
Even if it's like wrong, if you deserve it, you deserve it. Right. Yeah, and you're right about Woody. I'm just so tired. It's like I'm blue in the face of arguing that deal, and it's like I don't want to give up, but I just don't know anybody's listening.
Right, I'm with you.
And you know, and if you look at Witten's career compared to other tight ends that got in, okay, so if he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, you know, he's a second ballot Hall of Famer for sure, and I think he's had that type of career. And if you look at some of the other guys, part of the 15 in there. Yeah, both of those guys deserve to be in. And I'm sure some of those other guys too, but some of them you just have to wait.
Yeah.
I think Woody, in his 18th year of eligibility and fourth time into the top 15, it's time now, and somebody needs to recognize it, because if Steve Atwater is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, then Woody should have been in 5 years ago.
Damn straight. I agree with that. Thank you very much, good sir. I do believe you'll get to talk more with Alec tomorrow.
All right. Well, I always enjoy talking with Alec.
There you go.
Thanks,
Mickey Spagnola from DallasCowboys.com. Now, Alec, we can have a conversation about this another day. You get a max, I believe, of 5 modern players into the Hall of Fame. I think Drew Brees and Larry Fitzgerald are locks.
Yeah.
My concern is Willie Anderson, Torrey Holt, Luke Kuechly, and Adam Vinatieri were all in the final 7 last year. And so I'm like, ooh, so if they, I mean, even if that take, if 2 of them make it,
yeah.
So then you got 1 spot left. I think this is just criminal. I believe Darren Woodson will have to wait until the senior committee votes him in. I think it's wrong, wrong, wrong. It just feels like that's the way that it's going. And then the Cardinals signed tight end Ribaldo Fairweather off of the Cowboys practice squad. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, oh, it's time for AM on the FM.
We got the question of the day. Plus, what is a butt stunt double? And why did this world-renowned actor turn it down? Next on The Fan.